Hello there, everybody. It's me, Gary Kidney, the co-host of You've Got to Be Kidding Me on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
And I am Liam Jones, my full name, and I am also a part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network as a co-host for You've Got to Be Kidding Me.
We are a TNA history podcast that covers TNA 1 month at a time. We cover all the drama, all the matches, all the Vince Russo nonsense you could ever want in your life.
Have you heard of TNA? I bet you have, but would it be funnier if two people made jokes over it the whole time? Probably.
So if that sounds like fun to you, check it out on this very Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network, and Liam will do bits and whatnot.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Super J Cast. I'm Joel, joined by Damon McDonald. It is Tuesday, the 28th of May, 2024. This is episode 312. I forgot to introduce us. I was going to say we're the cockroach of the New Japan Pro Wrestling fandom. Just putting back a curtain on what I thought was a really interesting conversation we just had before we record.
That's all right. We'll continue it on. You know, we're pretty good at this at this point, with 300 and some odd shows under our belts. Doing pretty good. The cockroaches we were talking about. We're the cockroaches. People are just jumping off the bandwagon left and right. And can't say I blame them. It's amazing that people still talk about this, let alone us. I feel like we're us and probably even the good friends at the Keeping It Strong Style, they're still swinging at the fences, and various others probably falling by the wayside, questioning the decision to do this. But yeah, we're the cockroaches, man. We are the fucking roaches. That's what we are.
I was saying off the air that I think as much as this promotion might get us down in the dumps with their silliness, we provide an important public service in reflecting the mood of the Phantom. Mm. And you know, it's interesting sort of to parallel to stuff that's going on in AEW, because I've seen Voices of Wrestling, particularly Neil David, getting a lot of flack this week for a review he wrote, a very scathing review, which I agreed with actually, about recent AEW programming, and then you know, people sort of dogpiling in the mentions saying like, oh, you know, if you don't like it, if you're reviewing it, you should, you know, try and drum up some sort of enthusiasm for it. And I don't think that's fair. I don't think you should.
No. Why?
It does not benefit anyone to generate false, like disingenuous positivity. I think if the product is bad, then we owe it to you, the listener, to say that it is. And this is not, you know, I've enjoyed some stuff since we last recorded, but just with the general mood around New Japan at the moment, I use the analogy of Arsenal. You know, when Arsenal had a terrible week, terrible results, when I listen to Arsenal Vision podcast or Arsblog podcast, I don't want to hear them going, oh no, yeah, everything's great, everything's fine. I want to hear my concerns and my worries and my sadness and frustration reflected in that podcast, because then it feels like you're being heard, and that can alleviate a lot of the frustration. So basically, Damon says he's going to quit the podcast if Evil wins at Dominion.
That's the news. That's the breaking news. I'm very worried. Like, I'm just kind of feel like I'm hanging on by a thread certain weeks. And then, you know, we got this Dominion show right around the corner that has me a little worried in the sense of, am I going to be able to make it through shows this summer? Knowing full well that he's headlining the shows. It's going to be some tough sledding. And you know, the conversation did revolve around that of, you know, what are we going to do if he does? Like, I was almost to the point where, do you still want to do this? And, you know, the conversation kind of turned to, I mean, look, we're not patting ourselves on the fucking back here, But we do.
I am. I like
you are. All right, good. I appreciate that. I'm glad somebody is. But not for nothing, we do have the microphone. We have the microphones. And I think we've established ourselves, this show, for all the nonsense that we talk about, for all the goofiness, for all the whatever. I feel like we have established ourselves as a point person when it comes to New Japan Pro Wrestling. That is well earned. And I think that people are kidding themselves if they don't think that. That being said, we're still fans. We're doing this because we love the product. Like, we love watching. We love talking about it. We love sharing our thoughts. We love sharing our opinions. But I don't know. I just don't want to be in an echo chamber with everyone else kind of saying this fucking blows. But in the same breath, I cannot physically, I'm just being honest, I can't give you false, like, cheerfulness if I'm not feeling it. I just can't. And I feel like that is such a disservice to a person who's listening. Like, honestly, I would say this. Seriously. You probably need to evaluate yourself. If you listen to something just to feel positive, like, that is not what this is. If it's positive, go back and listen to 2019, 2018, 2020. There's plenty of stuff that we have jizzed all over ourselves over. Like, when it's good, we are there carrying the fucking flag and waving it from the highest mountaintop. But when it's not, it's not. And we can't, I'm not going to sit here and lie. I'm just not. And anybody who does, I'll tell you flat out, anybody who does do that, just stop. Like, unless you're getting a paycheck, what are you doing? Like, how do you get up in the fucking morning and sit in front of this laptop? Not this laptop. Don't sit in front of mine. Sit in front of yours. And a microphone. And
you don't want to look at what's on Damon's laptop.
Yeah, my laptops are very cutting edge. MacBooks. How could you listen to that? And B, how could you produce, like, how can that be your stance? Now, again, I'm saying that as, you know, you're just saying positivity to be positivity, just like if somebody were just being negative just to be negative, like, that's equally as bad. Like, if you can come to the table, though, like, if you can come to the table and you're doing a show and you can say, okay, here are the reasons why this is good, you know, that's fair. I can give it a listen. Everybody has different opinions. But if you're just flying, you know, if you're just kind of purposely going out of your way to be positive about something when it's not, or again, being negative about it when it's really actually quite good, without that caveat of facts or at least opinions backed up with something substantial, then get the fuck up the street, you know?
People can sniff that out, Damon. I think that lack of authenticity has a very, very short shelf life for both ends of the spectrum.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to think so, but, you know, you shared comments with me, not directly related to this show, but, you know, if people are shitting on somebody being critical and having points, again, you can counterbalance that with an argument. There's nothing wrong with the discussion of it. Absolutely not. But if you're just going to be like, well, why don't you just be positive? Grow up. Seriously, grow the fuck up. And this is somebody who talks about ass eating regularly. Grow the fuck up.
I think this would be an interesting discussion point here. We've got a question from at the Lambdalorian. He says, if you guys were appointed as joint presidents of New Japan, what are the first three things you would do to improve the company and the product they produce and why? So what do you see as the top three issues?
Top three issues. One is the over-reliance on Western pro wrestlers, the fact that we don't have we take our sweet ass time making stars that are homegrown when they're right under our nose, and three, the what made most people, and I can't speak for everyone, and I don't really know if I could, but I feel that the people who listen to this show, by and large, were brought to this product because it was an alternative to pro wrestling as it was presented here in the States and elsewhere. And what made that special was really the core concept of the World Championship is the most important thing in this promotion. And we are having matches that reflect that, that people will crawl, scratch, bite, claw, whatever you want for that title. And it's the most important thing. And the matches reflected that. The talent in the ring made those titles feel extra special, along with the booking. That those days are long gone, I feel like. Like those days are long gone. We were brought to this product, and for me, maybe many years ago. For others, maybe rather recently. But I think by and large, it was the fact that you knew that when you turned on New Japan Pro Wrestling, you might have shit that sticks with you, you might have shit that doesn't. But overall, you're going to leave that show with, I saw some fucking great pro wrestling. And I don't know if the majority of the time now, when you turn off that TV, you're left with, ooh, that was good. That was good. I can't say that you can say that. So those are the three things. Really, those are the three things. And there are other things, you know, I would focus literally on Japan and not worry about what's going on in the States. There's plenty of other things that I would say I would do. But those the number one thing is get back to the basics of why people are watching this product, and deliver on that promise. That's all. How about you? What would you say?
I don't know if it's beyond the remit of the question just to say new ownership, because I really think the Bushiroad ownership is doing more harm than good at the moment, seeing as their finances are in the shitter. And from everyone I talk to, Kidani is
clueless.
I would say, he's clueless. I think well-meaning, but he doesn't know what he's doing. Yeah. And his interfering in the booking of the product is causing serious issues for New Japan, and that makes it very difficult to analyze the booking and attribute blame, because a lot of the stuff, it could be Ghetto / whatever the booking committee is, oh, it's a mistake they've made, they're washed, they're cooked, we need new voices in the room. And I don't know how much of it is Kidani telling them, oh, you've got to do this, we've got to have this new title, this guy's got to be pushed, we're signing this guy, you've got to do this show, you've got to have this partnership or whatever.
Okay.
So it's very hard to pass that out.
Okay, so but if the buck stops at the top, Joel, there's your answer. Like if we're to believe that he is the leader of the pack, like the buck stopped with him. So you start there. Like you start at the top. Yeah. And yeah, I'm with you. Like when he sent out that fucking tweet of, you know, it's really expensive now, and the yen is half, and all the money and on Western, like nobody told you to fucking put half of your titles on, you know, nobody told you to do that. Fucking unbelievable. All right, I'm sorry. Go ahead, please.
Secondly, would be get rid of half of those titles. I think a good 50% of them are poorly booked enough to be obsolete. So just shave that and just focus on the ones that you're actually going to book well. And I would have to take a copy an idea from Dragon Gate, because you know they do these faction disband matches where it's like faction against faction, and then the losing team, their faction has to disband. I think New Japan desperately needs to do that. So I do like a mega show where you'd have I don't know, four matches or something that are all faction versus faction, along the sort of similar lines of the United Empire versus War Dogs thing that they did. And I would dissolve, I'd get rid of Chaos, I'd get rid of House of Torture, and I'd get rid of LIJ.
Me too.
Because I think having all those guys clumped up together is doing them a disservice. And I would use that opportunity to basically restructure the roster and think, right, who are the guys that we're going to push, and have some new factions from the ashes of that, headed by your stars of tomorrow, and even the stars of today, who I would like to see in more prominent roles. Guys like Tai Chi. And from what I hear, he's very satisfied with his role. So
sure, you get paid to do nothing.
He wouldn't even want to do this, but he's a fucking great wrestler and he's incredibly charismatic and the fans love him. So I would say, sorry, I don't care if you prefer being a mid-carder. You're going to be the head of this new faction. Put guys like that and guys who you want to build the company around, you know, looking at your musketeers, people like that, to be, right, these are the guys you need to pay attention to, because just the booking is very, very stale. It's really, really in the doldrums at the moment, as we will get onto with discussing Best of the Super Juniors. But just the usual tropes are just getting very played out at this moment, very sort of creatively stagnant for me.
Yeah, I mean, I'm right with you, dude. I got to be honest with you. I'm right with you. And even though there's...
He should be head of a faction.
I hate factions. I told you, this is established. We should have never had him to begin with. Or, you know what? Let's have the fucking, the young kids be the leaders. Like I hate that we're doing a draft here, but, you know, it's like four of them are like, you're the new leaders, right? You pick the fucking teams. You pick. And we can go from there.
Well, I tell you what, let's throw out that idea to, was it Sean Cedar and is it Griffin that does the draft podcast? There's an idea for you to do an episode.
Yeah.
New Japan, new faction draft, where everyone's got to make their own faction, getting, you know, four or five guests on that, pick from current New Japan roster, just make a whole load of new factions with new leaders and just see what that looks like, because it'll probably be a lot of fun.
I bet it would. Isn't that amazing to you? And again, we're going to talk Best of the Super Juniors, I'm sure, but as we sit here on the 28th of May with really, what, two shows. Yeah, we got a show on Thursday and then Friday. And we have a log jam up at Block A. We have kind of it's been thinned out a little bit, but kind of one in Block B. Like, are you interested in any of this? Like, are you sitting on the edge of your chair saying, oh, come on, Blake Christian. Come on. You know what I mean? No, like, I just feel like there's such an...
Yeah, there's no realistic, exciting outcome for me in terms of this. So I guess we're moving on to this now. I think we have some questions on these lines. Big picture thoughts on the tournament here. So Jersey Joe Gotch says, historically speaking, is this one of the worst Best of the Super Juniors ever? Because it feels that way. How would you rank it versus the other years? Let's go with that one first.
All right, let's go with that one.
About this bossage.
The problem is, and here we go, I don't think we've had, and again, we have two matches or two nights and the semis as well before we get to the finals. We've seen some good pro wrestling, no doubt. I don't think we've seen anything that's knocked our socks off. Like nothing that we're like, even if it were like controversial and people were like, you know, I hate to, you know, we're talking about two of the generation's best high-flying pro wrestlers in Ospreay and Ricochet. But, like, I remember when that match landed and the talk was, you know, half the people thought it was the greatest thing since sliced bread. The other people were like, this is the future. This is where we are. This is what we're going to. But at least there was like buzz and discourse and opinions and like energy that was there. Like, I don't know if I've had any conversations in the past week with anyone aside from me sitting down with you here today talking about Best of the Super Juniors, which is mind-blowing to me. Like, it's just been there. Has this been the worst? No. But I'm saying no, but you would probably have to go into like the early 2000s and like late 90s to really find like maybe a bad one, but I don't even think they were bad. I just think this one is completely stale. Like, this is the stalest I think I've felt in quite a long time when it comes to Best of the Super Junior. And the problem is that going into it with the lineup, and again, we knew that there would be some struggles in the sense that, okay, who's going to be the guy that's going to carry the torch to give you the bangers? But you thought, okay, the potential's there. Like, I remember doing the preview of this, and like we were kind of pumped up for this. And whew, like this has been good, but let's just be honest here. I think the overall feel of it is that it's kind of underdelivered.
Yeah, I think it's interesting sort of comparing it to the pandemic ones where they had a very limited roster to work with. So then you can kind of understand things being a little bit stale, but it feels a lot less than the sum of its parts. And I don't think that's the fault of the wrestlers. I think it's the fault of the booking where, and again, Francesco Acquaré's injury may have and probably has impacted this a lot, because if you run with a theory that he was going to be going deep into this tournament and maybe even going to the semis or even the finals, then yeah, that would have obviously shaken things up. But it just feels like we're focusing on the same old guys, and there was an opportunity. I think there were enough exciting names in this field to really shake things up and have people talking. You know, if we'd been going into these block final nights with guys like Fujita still in the mix, or Kevin Knight, or you know, even someone like
Driller Clark
Connors, just someone different, yeah, or Driller, then there will be some excitement there. But it just feels like we're sleepwalking towards, you know, the same old names as if it were 2018 booking again, and it just feels like a real disservice to what I think is a very deep and very talented roster of junior heavyweights. Because on paper, like, it's much, if they're taking these 20 junior heavyweights, if you compare them to, you know, the 20 top heavyweights that they've got, I think the talent in the junior field laps what they've got in the heavyweights. But just the booking has been so insipid and predictable that it's hard to get excited about any of the possible outcomes going into the final few days of the tournament.
Right. And these are guys that, quite honestly, I mean, overall can go. You know, Despy can go. Teton can go. Ishimori. Okay, let's be honest, he can go. I know.
Can be the operative word there. Can doing a lot of heavy lifting.
Correct. I understand. Hiromu can. You know, Robbie Eagles technically is eliminated. But again, you're right. I just remember going into this thinking, okay, the talent is there. Let's do something fun. Let's do this. And I do understand the fact that they made the decision of making the finals the main event. So I think that might have handcuffed them a little bit. The injury definitely handcuffed them. I'm begging this promotion to try something different. I'm begging this promotion to ignite, like, you know what it feels like? It feels like we're rooting for a team, a sports team, that right now they suck. You know, they, you know, average at best. But there's talent in the farm system in the minor leagues. That's
like England.
What's that?
It's the England national team. It's the England national team. Lots of young, excited talent, but not being used in a bold enough way to really take advantage of that.
But here's the bottom line. This is, they control their destiny. Like, again, if we're talking about the English national team, there's plenty of reasons why those young guys haven't made it. And it might be experience. And it might be, you know, there's people that are just, you know, you're not going to get rid of just because, you know, they've earned their spot on a roster. Okay, fine. My point being is that you can make data point arguments. This guy, puck possession or ball possession or whatever. Attacking zone. You know, there's numbers that can justify those decisions. But like, what the fuck are the, like, you control this. This is pro wrestling. That's again another reason why that fucking tweet drove me nuts. Because you control it. Like, you control it. I don't know. Again, I do like to say that coming up with the ideas is the easy part, and getting the wrestlers to agree and to implement and away we go is a completely different story. But you're pro wrestling. You control the fucking narrative. This is a story we're doing here. And that's the frustrating part. It's like what, what's the end goal here? Like, what are we doing? What the fuck are we doing? And that's frustrating. That's frustrating, knowing that, one, you're feeling that now. Two, you see down the road the sirens and the barricades. Like, the worst is yet to come. The worst is yet to come. Again, unless they pull something completely out of their ass and shock the world, and we're here next week talking about, hey, you know what? We bitched and moaned and we felt terrible. But boy, did they pull something out of their ass and greatness occurred, right? And here we go. Let's go. I don't see that happening. I don't see that happening at all. So that's where we are, man. Best of the Super Juniors. I wouldn't say it's the worst. I would say it's definitely the most vanilla, driest, shoulder shrug. If you have skipped it, I don't feel like you missed anything. Kind of couple weeks. And that's a shame, because going into it, I know both you and I were excited by it.
All right, so how would you like to tackle this? Would you like to just go through the Sunday and Tuesday shows chronologically, or should we sort of look at who's at the top of the blocks and work backwards from there?
Let's do the top of the block. I mean, this, I don't know if anyone, all right, well, let's do this. Let's change gears a little bit. What did you like? You mentioned that you watched, I forget which show you said you watched, but you walked out saying, okay, that was good. I feel good. And then it went sour. So why don't you talk about that process first in your head?
Okay, so the Sunday show in Yoyogi, great crowd, really good. I think they really elevated the experience there. And I think that was one of maybe the best 10-match card of this whole tour. Because there was something to enjoy about each of the matches. I thought the Ninja Mac getting his big win over Kushida, that was really great. And I thought they really meshed well with their sort of mirrored flippy-doos and grappling. I found that really entertaining, and the crowd was into that. And a spot where there was a sunset flip and then Ninja Mac just did a load of backflips. Great opener. Like, really entertaining. That's exactly the sort of stuff. Five minutes, 58 seconds, just crowd on their feet. Enjoyed that a lot. So it was nice to see Ninja Mac getting a win, because I thought he's added a lot of value to this tournament. And Kushida, I think, has also over-delivered on my admittedly low expectations.
So yep.
That was good for me. The second match, Hayata defeating Kosei Fujita. Now, Hayata, I think, has been fine. Like, I'm sorry this is going to upset people, but to me, he's on the tier of like a Bushi or a Kanemaru, like perfectly, like technically solid, like a good solid wrestler, but at their best when they are wrestling against a young and fiery underdog babyface. And I thought he was a really good foil to Fujita here. So even though Hayata won, I thought he helped Fujita to look really good. Okay. So that was a positive as well. Even though, you know, I would have liked to have seen Fujita not be on 4 points at this stage of the tournament, but
yeah,
you do. Show defeating Dragon Dyer. I mean, Dragon Dyer still on 0 points. Again, that's sad to me that they've probably just been a case of him getting Taguchi's booking. So
right.
I'm guessing Taguchi would have had 0 points at this point as well. And it was, you know, kind of fun seeing them bullying Dragon Dyer and stealing his skateboard. And I was just wondering, actually, Yo was also doing skateboard related stuff at some point in
recent. Where'd they get the skateboard at?
Well, I was wondering if there was going to be like Yo versus Dragon Dyer, where there would have been some sort of skateboarding shenanigans. But again, maybe I'm getting sidetracked here. But again, Show being in the third match of a 10-match card is perfect against an underdog babyface like Dragon Dyer. Great, you know, this is exactly where I want to see House of Torture. That's fun. That's good. Main event of Dominion, no thanks. Third match and a 10-match card? Yeah, absolutely. Give me more of that. Blake Christian defeating Bushi. I enjoyed that way more than I thought I would. Again, Blake Christian is getting a lot of criticism, and I'm not saying it's... I don't know. I think I feel that people have been hypercritical and perhaps holding him to standards that they're not holding other wrestlers to. But again, I'm not accusing people of being disingenuous. I just feel there's a kind of a sort of echo chamber effect where it's like it's become the hip thing to dogpile Blake Christian. And I think he's been fine. You know, I've sat through a Flip Gordon, Best of the Super Juniors. By comparison, Blake Christian has been good. I think it's been good. I thought this match was good. And, you know, there's got to be a point at which, when he's delivering, okay, fine, big match against El Desperado, okay, but then when he's delivering against, I don't know, just off the top of my head, the TJP and the Hayata match was good, and this Bushi match was good. I can't just hand wave that and say, oh, these are all carry jobs. You know, I think Blake has held his own, and maybe it was better for him. He's yielded better results, because in this match, he was basically working babyface. And I think that has been more conducive to getting the best out of him than the heel gimmick that he was working towards. But again, I thought Blake has been perfectly fine. I don't have any issues or major criticism about his performances or his booking. Like, it's been good. Then,
I'm sorry. Good.
Ishimori versus Jilla Maloney. So, I mean, Ishimori is Ishimori. What more can you say about him at this point? Everything that's already been said is accurate. He's a guy, when he needs to deliver, he does, I think. You know, when he gets a tap on the shoulder, he can deliver very high-quality matches. But when he's sort of dogging it through the stodgier parts of a Best of the Super Juniors, then there's not a lot to write home about. I think more interesting conversations that we had are around Driller Maloney, who I had high expectations from, and he's not been bad, but he's not necessarily delivered to the extent that I would have liked him to. And I was discussing this with Jay Michael, who brought up the point. And again, this is not to make him immune from criticism, but he has crunched the numbers and told me that Dan Maloney is 14th in match average length. And that was with getting a big boost with main event against Hiromu today.
Wow.
So Driller is averaging 8 minutes 51 per match.
What are you going to do?
He had two sub 5 minute matches in a row. So he's not been given a lot of time, but J. Michael makes the point, and I agree with him, still enough to make more of an impression. I think I would have more to say about Driller when we come to discuss the match he had with Hiromu, but his whole gimmick this tournament has been about setting up the Driller Killer as this sort of like nuclear finish. If he lands it, it's death. You know, no one's kicking out of it. So that has been the story of his tournament. And that seems to have been, again, I'm sort of jumping ahead to today. Okay, I'll just stick a pin in that for now, right? That is, that's been the story of Driller. It's all about the Driller Killer, and I'm going to have to look this up because it was a very, very clever pun, and I want to give it to, credit to the right person. So this is from our Discord. This is Shruby in the Discord, who says, Maloney's finisher, Driller Killer. The rest of his offense, Driller Filler.
Oh,
a little bit harsh, because I think he's been good, Driller, but you know, maybe I'm guilty of overhyping him. Like, the when he's in control for the majority of a match, then you know, perhaps there's not as much there as we would like to sort of keep us on the edge of our seats. So,
all right, yeah, can I play devil's advocate on that? Sure. Why would he? Why would he go out there and bust his fucking head open to put on a great match when, you know, he's bound for...
Yes, that's an excellent point. And that's why this is tricky for me to discuss without bringing in discussion about his match with Hiromu, which I can't talk about without talking about Hiromu versus Robbie Eagles. So that's why I'm saying I want to just sort of stick a pin in the Driller talk for now. Done. And I'll come back to that when we come to talk about Hiromu, because I think it will sort of make more sense then. But it's structured in a way that I think I need to sort of set the table for that conversation from both sides. Kanemaru versus Titan. Very good. Enjoyed that. I find Kanemaru matches more fun when he wins, because the sort of finishing sequences where he does something clever and dastardly, it's always creative. He always comes up with something a bit new and very clever where you think, you know, he got him that time out smarter than him. It's not tropey, and he's not sort of recycling the same spots each time. So that was good. And Titan is always great. Kevin Knight versus Clark Connors. Love this. Really excellent. This has been one of the bright spots of both of these wrestlers. I think Clark has arguably outshone... You know, he has outshone Driller Maloney. I don't think there can be any debate about that. Agreed. And he's really starting to shine, Clark Connors. And I'd be curious to see how much time these two spent together in the LA Dojo, because they have really great chemistry here. And very hot match. Kevin Knight, I said before, he's really starting to put it all together. And the offense is looking crisp and dangerous, and whereas he's sort of whiffing on a lot of stuff last year, now he's, you know, the stuff is landing and it looks painful. Like, they look like moves that would hurt another person in a wrestling match, which is a big positive. And this all, to me, I enjoyed this so much. It kind of felt like a match that was setting up for a generational rivalry between these two. You know, this should be something that I think is running into the future. And there's been some sort of kayfabe scuttlebutt about Kevin Knight may be joining the War Dogs. I think that would be a mistake, personally. I like the idea of setting these two guys up as sort of generational junior heavyweight rivals. I don't want to see either of them moving up anytime soon. You know, two guys from the LA Dojo with the pride of that on their backs, and just having that something that could last several years. And that could be, you know, each time they meet in a tournament or even in a tag match, you're sort of circling that thinking, we're seeing Kevin Knight against Clark again. This is going to be great, because it was good last time. So that, I think, has been highlighted one of the bright spots for, you know, both of these guys have really been highlights for me in this tournament. Anything you want to say about either of those guys?
I mean, Kevin Knight, we talked at length last week about how he's... Look, if we're looking for a bright spot in Best of the Super Juniors, it's the fact that Kevin Knight, and you're looking at it in front of your eyes, has taken another great leap forward in becoming a stud in New Japan Juniors. Like he fits like a glove. His confidence is there. Like, people are excited to see his matches because they know he can deliver. I mean, we really kind of laid it on thick last week, but he just keeps proving our point over and over again. So why not? I'd be thrilled if what you outlined were the case, where it's a generational feud, and yeah, it'd be great. We don't get them a lot anymore, it feels like. But yes, I agree.
Then I'm going to skip the ninth match and just do the main event. So TJP defeating El Desperado. That kind of proof of concept of this TJP push, because they put him in the big main event there in front of a really hot crowd, and the crowd were sort of living and dying by all the near falls. And it was a really excellent match and almost surprised me, which it shouldn't really, because I know both of these guys are really great wrestlers. But I think sometimes the ways that TJP has annoyed me this year have blinded me to, it's made me sort of forget that he's actually a fucking good wrestler.
Yep.
And you know, if we're looking at pure in-ring talent, maybe he does deserve this push, because this really an outstanding match, very dramatic near falls, crowd were really into it, so I can't have too many complaints. And again, if he's just going to keep it, stick to what he's good at and drop all the Aswang spooky nonsense, the Lucha Underground shit, then yeah, we got something to work with there. So that was really good. Yeah, anything you want to say about TJP and Despy?
I thought that was arguably top three best matches of the tournament, I think. I really enjoyed it. And again, you kind of saw the handwriting on the wall a little bit with TJP needing the win, getting the win. But I think everybody was into it. And like, to me, that's how it's done. That's what we're looking for. But like, I thought that this match, while it was great, and again, I hate, you know, it's probably not even fair for me to even say, but like, this would be middle of the road in other years, you know. It's just that the good stuff, when it finally hits, feels so much more than what maybe is in reality, just because we're pining for it so much. That being said, I thought the match was really good. Very, very good. And both these guys are fucking pros. So yeah, I'm in full agreement. If he dropped that nonsense, I think, I don't know. I really feel like if he dropped the nonsense, bigger things could be in his future. And I think less, he would get less pushback, right? Than if he just, you know, went and did his thing, as opposed to trying to be this mystical fucking, ugh. Yikes.
He does seem to be phasing it out. Like, it wasn't a factor in this match, to my memory at least.
No, I don't think it was. But you know it's in his back pocket, and you know it's going to happen when
it feels like it's something he has to be talked out of it.
Right, right. And it's going to pop it.
Like, there's someone backstage, like, you know, Jeff Cobb or Acker or someone, like literally putting the mask out of his hand. Be like, no, you're not taking the fucking mask out. Stop it. Right. Just wrestle normally.
Yes. I would love it. I wish there was that locker room police was there. But I like I said, I feel like it's going to, you know, rear its ugly head at the least, the moment you least want to see it, it's going to happen.
Okay, I'll allow him the odd blood mist spot, just like in towards the closing stretch of a match, if you just want to put that out there. Not in the actual final sequence. I don't want that being decisive, but, you know, in that sort of final 5 minutes of a match, just a little spray. I'll let him have that. That's it. That's all I'm giving him.
A little spray. All right. That's fair. All right, I'm dying now. Now you've built it up perfectly. You should be in broadcasting. Hiromu and Robbie Eagles. Take it away, Joel.
Yeah, we need to talk about Hiromu. So this match, it was great. Like, really fantastic match. And one of the best, like, bell-to-bell best in the tournament. And I think that was largely down to Robbie Eagles, who we have sung his praises for years on this podcast, so nothing new there. But the way they laid out the story of this match, with Robbie pretending to be doing like the good guy baby face, you know, the dueling chants, Robbie, big smiles, yeah, everyone, oh, look, cheering for Robbie, oh, cheering for Robbie, and with that misdirection, and then the chop battle where he's like, oh yeah, let's just have a big crowd-pleasing chop battle, and then luring him into that, the tease of the count out, the double count out, and Robbie's running back into the ring, falls right into Robbie's trap, and then Robbie just yanks him out of the ring, cracks his knee on the apron, and then he just starts cooking. And Robbie, one of the best in the business at doing the limb match, just surgical precision, just brilliant, just a master at that craft. Was loving it. Absolutely fantastic. However, as soon as that started, and the longer it went on, and the better Robbie was doing at just unpicking that knee, you knew what was coming. You knew the John Cena booking for Hiromu was about to rear its ugly head. And this is what I've been alluding to earlier on in this podcast about the tired, stale booking, not just in terms of the tournament points, but just in the matches themselves. Soon as Hiromu went, what did he start off with, like three losses? Like, even before the tournament started, when he went on that little losing streak, mm-hmm. you knew this is what it was coming to.
Yeah.
So Robbie just picks his knee apart, destroys it, and then locks in the Romulus special in the middle of the ring. Hiromu's reaching for the ropes, and then Robbie just pulls him away from the ropes, drags him back into the middle of the ring. And yeah, I was discussing this with Jay Michael, and he made the point that should have been the end of the match.
Yep.
But I knew it wasn't going to be, because we knew that the super Cena, super Hiromu comeback is coming. So Hiromu wins the match, and I think made Robbie look like a bit of a chump in the process. But you know, this is what we're doing with Hiromu. They obviously, I think the booking, whoever's responsible for booking this is a tacit acknowledgement that dominant Hiromu is not interesting or exciting or dramatic. So they've just gone back to the tried and tested losing streak, come from behind thing, which to me is equally boring, right? Does nothing for me. Now let's parachute into the Driller match, the main event, where the whole story of Driller Maloney's tournament has been establishing the Driller Killer as this death move, mm-hmm. where he hits it and it's game over. And he hits it on Hiromu. And just from the way they were positioned, I knew what was going to happen. Hiromu puts his foot up on the rope, which to me, that's essentially a kick out. Does that count as a kick out if you sure. put your foot on the ropes? I think so.
Well,
so
all right, maybe a little bit less if you're looking at this game. But I get your point. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
So the whole match structure, well, the whole tournament structure for Driller has been built and then sacrificed at the altar of the Hiromu babyface comeback. And I think the whole structure of that match with Driller working over Hiromu's leg, it was the same as the Robbie match. So we've had the same match twice in a row. And again, I don't know how much of it is Driller being told by, you know, whoever the agent is that, right, in this main event against Hiromu, the majority of this match needs to be you working over Hiromu's knee. And how much voice he has in that. But I felt that hurt a lot of the drama in the match, where this was a really big spot for Driller to have a main event with Hiromu. And it just felt like an inferior version of the Robbie match, where I think they should have been going for something a bit different. And I feel, I got really annoyed when he kicked out of the Driller Killer, because they'd done a really effective job in making that move deadly, not just in this tournament, but for, you know, the last year of booking, because that's been built up. That's one of my favourite moves now in New Japan. And that's just sort of thrown into the graveyard for the, let's get Hiromu's babyface comeback over.
And let's think about that. Like,
yeah.
For what? Like, so again, we're if we are to believe that we are trying to get Driller Maloney over and we're trying to get his finisher over, wouldn't you think that they would wait? If they were going to say, okay, tonight's the night that someone kicks out of this devastating maneuver, it's going to be in front of, you know, I don't know. It's going to mean a little bit more than a late round in Best of the Super Juniors. You know what I mean? Like that's where I feel like we've lost the plot when it comes to New Japan. Like, because before we would save that. That would be like, it was a big fucking deal if somebody kicked out of a Rainmaker, or if somebody kicked out of a fucking whatever, pick your finishing move. I don't give a shit. You get my point, though. You know what I mean? It's like, what was the point of that? Like, he could have done fucking anything, and Hiromu could have kicked out. And instead, they chose, let's kick out of a move that he's been trying to get over for how long now? And the entire tournament? It felt just like, oh, okay. Well, we condensed a good long time run into what, a couple months, if that, weeks. Yeah, that was incredibly disappointing. I'm with you.
Yeah, it's one of these moments where the unpleasant moments, you feel the invisible hand of the booker, and it shatters that suspension of disbelief, both him kicking out the Driller Killer and him not submitting against Robbie Eagles, where you just feel, oh, okay, well, it's because, you know, he's got to make the babyface comeback and get the points, which I don't want to have that feeling. Right. That's not a good feeling.
Do you think we think too much about it in the sense of, okay, we are the nerds that are
you think after 312 episodes that we're thinking too much about this product? Maybe a bit.
Maybe a bit. All right, fair enough. We are the cockroaches. Talking about this and discussing this for the past half hour, 45 minutes, 50 minutes, is this overwhelming sense of they think we don't remember, or they think we don't care. And yet we're the only ones that do care. Like you've chased everyone else away. Like, we're the people that care. So wouldn't you think you would cater some of this to that? Like we know that we've been, you know, conditioned and trained to say, okay, Driller Maloney, he hits the Driller Killer, we're going to bed, that's that. Like, we're trained, but we're also trained in, okay, big star goes on a losing streak in the beginning, and boom, all of a sudden, here we go. And the people who started out hot, you know they're going on a fucking losing streak at the end. Like, it's the same shit every day. It's like they have this template, and they just, all they do is just change the wrestlers, right?
Yeah. Shelton X Benjamin booking in the G1, where he like rattled off four wins.
Right.
And it was like, oh, Shelton's going to win the G1. And then he didn't. Right. And then they've just been doing that for 12 years.
It really does. And it's like, guys, we're the ones, we watch these shows. Like, we're not parachuting in and be like, oh, how about that great comeback? No, we're sitting here saying, well, okay, we've seen this every fucking year. And not only every year.
You know what it is? Tournament. No, this is that. This is the Manchester City comeback. That's what Hiromu is. Yep. He's Man City.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. And I'm going to say it. I don't give a fuck. Come at me. Don't come at me. But come at me. I'm over Hiromu. I am really...
That is the elephant in the room.
Yeah.
That is the difficult conversation we need to have.
We have to have that conversation. I'm over it. I'm over everything about him. In fact, it's gotten to the point where he's incredibly annoying now. Like he's the joy that I got... The chaos, the you don't know what's coming, left, right, the interviews, wacky. Like, it's lost its charm on me. I am over it. I am really over it. If anyone, and this is coming from a guy who has had extended periods of time off due to injury. Dare I say that I kind of enjoyed him not being around. Right? And maybe I just feel it more this time, but I'm just kind of like, boy, I would be quite content if he never graced my screen again. Maybe not again, but for a while. Because everything just, he just feels like a character of himself. Like, he has the Family Guy line, he insists on himself. That's what I keep every time I see him. I think of that fucking one scene where they're in the with the Star Wars trash compactor. I've never seen it. What do you mean you've never seen it? It insists upon itself. What does that even mean? That's what I feel about Hiromu at this point. That is what I feel about him. So yeah.
It's not a credible comeback story, is it? When it's a guy who's absolutely dominated this division and has won this tournament, what, four times now, that they kind of got themselves into a position where they probably feel, again, I'm assuming he is going to be in the final, that they need him to be in that final. They need him in the main event of Dominion to sell tickets because they think he's a draw. And they might very well be right. Tickets are sold.
But you know what I mean? Like, are we?
They ran out of. They don't have a compelling tournament story to tell with him anymore.
No. No. And again, is the winner of, you know, these semifinals, like, is that going to, like, are walk-up sales going to go through the fucking roof no matter who's in it? Like, I don't know. I don't fucking know. It doesn't make any sense to me. Like, the tickets are sold already. And walk-up is not, it's not going to, like, people are not going to go run to the fucking ticket booth over Despy and Hiromu. What are we doing, Joel? What the fuck are we doing?
What's going on, guys? This is Rich, co-host of the Flagship Podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcast Network. We'll get right back to your show. Just want a brief moment to tell you about a sponsor that we have here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcast Network, Arena Club. Now, Arena Club, man, they're great for card collectors. If you're a card collector out there, this is the read for you. And in this hobby, you know, I know you know, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up. We think, oh man, here's the 86 Michael Jordan Fleer rookie card. It's going to be in this pack. It never is. It's never in that pack. And usually you don't have zero, you have zero transparency on available cards and hit rates. It's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com. The only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each and every one. And when I buy slab packs from Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. And I've talked about before, I go to card shows, I grab random packs, I have fun opening them, but I know there's nothing good ever in there. There never is. There's never going to... Why? That's why they're available to buy, because there's nothing good in there. That's not the case anymore with Arena Club slab packs. They're better than those mystery packs, because they have a display of available cards. They have a display of the hit rates. They have a display of the grading. You know exactly what you're getting. It's transparent. And Arena Club, more than that, they're an awesome place for collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying. If you're a card collector, you get it all at Arena Club. Now, Arena Club slab packs are revolutionizing the repack game, like we said, with full transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed into your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. And the Arena Club grading process is great. It's fast, it's accurate, it's transparent, with a full grade rationale provided, an explanation of how your card was scored. You're not putting this thing in an envelope, send it out to the mail, and then get back a number. Oh, it's a 6.2. Why? Whatever. Too bad. We just said it was 6.2. No, you get all of the rationale, all the explanation of how your card is scored and how it is graded. And man, Arena Club, whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. But there's even better news here, because right now you can get 10% off your first purchase at Arena Club by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Make sure you use that link to get the 10% off your first purchase. Again, arenaclub.com/VOWnet. That is a crazy offer. That is 10% off of your first purchase of anything. If it's a $400 slab pack, you're getting $40 off immediately just by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Anyways, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase. arenaclub.com/VOWnet, 10% off your first purchase. And we appreciate them for sponsoring the Voice Wrestling Podcast Network. Now, back to your show.
And I think this was exacerbated by the booking in today's show, where in the, well, both of the top two matches, really, they could have, and again, a lot of this is probably down to their accurate injury, but even so, it doesn't give them a pass on this, where Ishimori defeating Sho and then Hiromu defeating Driller just wiped out the possibility of anyone else apart from them two and Doki going through. Which is a really weird thing to do, because they could have easily, whichever two guys they wanted to go through, they could have preserved that and preserved some of the drama of these other contenders. You know, have guys like Sho and Driller still be in the mix. Just so there's a little bit of uncertainty. But now, if I'm not mistaken, the B block finals on the 31st, Robbie Eagles versus Doki, that's, Robbie doesn't have a chance of going through unless there's a sort of wacky four-way tie.
He has no chance because, correct me if I'm wrong, and people will. Doesn't he lose a tiebreaker? It's like he lost to somebody. Yeah. So he's eliminated.
I think he's lost to both. Yeah. He's done. And I think he didn't even realize that on commentary.
How would he?
Proves to show what an incoherent mess this is. And then Ishimori versus Hiromu. Ishimori's already through.
Yeah.
So this is just the case of like Hiromu has to win to stay in the tournament.
Right.
Which is such a tired booking trait. Again, J. Michael's crunched the numbers. It's like 95% of the time, he says, where the trailing wrestler in the block has ended up winning the match to make it through. They do this every single time.
There you go.
So I do want to take a moment to celebrate the fact that Doki is doing really well with the points, way better than he used to. I think he'd sort of previously hit a ceiling of 6 points in all the other tournaments he had. And now he's on 10, with the possibility of getting to 12. That's great. I don't think he is going through to the semifinals. I don't know. Maybe this could be a case of they wanted to do this Ishimori Hiromu thing last year. And of course, Ishimori got injured. And so they were not able to do that. And maybe this is a make good, or they just had to get this story out of their system with Ishimori and Hiromu one more time. But it's like, man, it's not 2018 anymore.
Right.
Can we move on from Hiromu and Ishimori being at the top here? Can we do something different? Like 6 years have elapsed since then. Let's have something and someone else, please.
Injuries and mileage and all of that has played a factor in both of those gentlemen's careers. Like, yeah, can we spice it up a little bit? I mean, that's, I guess, you know, last year I was kind of hoping that we would see a little bit blend over to this year. And we have a little bit with Teton being in the mix, but come on, I want to sit here and give them all the benefit of the doubt that I possibly can with injuries, right? Maybe this would have been different. Maybe this would have been different. And they were just booked.
Maybe. Like, they might have had, like, a year in advance have their final four penciled in as Akira, Watto, Yo, and right. Taguchi or someone. And then all of those guys got injured. They're like, well, fuck, what are we going to do now?
Right. I mean, I'll give them there is that angle of, okay, our backs were against the wall. We had nothing else we could fucking do. And we just had to get out of this situation and boom, away. But here we are. But again, that being said, I mean, I know that you were like, you're kind of okay with, what was it? Hayata and Fujita. Like, I don't know. Like, would it have hurt him to get a win? I don't know. I look at the standings, and I'm sorry. To me, standings mean this is who we want to heat up. And when I see guys like Drilla, and again, did he do a lot to fucking make a case for himself? Probably not. But okay, great. And I see guys, you know, I don't know, like Kevin Knight in the, like, kinda in the mix. I don't know. I just look. I'm begging for some spice, because all I have is just bland food. Like, I just have bland. I'm dying for some curry. I'm dying for a fucking spicy noodly Thai dish. I'm fucking dying. But no, I know what I get. I get fucking leftover Sunday roast. That's dry as a shoe. That's what I get. I'm sick of it. I want something. We want something else. We want something else. We want something else. I'm doing a mash bit. We want something else, though. We do. We definitely do. But I'm with you, dude. Like, it's. We're beating a dead horse. I know what I'm curious, though. I am curious in the sense of, okay, We've aired our grievances. We've let it be known here in this public forum. Are we off the mark? Because I don't feel like we are, and I feel like the feedback that we get, the feedback we get is pretty much in line with this. So I'm curious. Like, are we just being overly negative? Are we just black cloud fuck faces, or right. Are we on point?
Well, the response to the Hiromu win was, "Lol, Hiromu wins." On our Discord, and I'm very cognizant of not taking that as necessarily the most accurate portrayal of fan sentiment, because our Discord has got a very sort of unique character to it. But even beyond that,
is that what you call it?
On Twitter, Tomodachi Troll 42 says, bizarre results today. Had they had Sho Ishimori go to double count out, they could have had Robbie Doki and Hiromu Ishimori be the deciders as expected. Instead, only options for first and second now are Ishimori, Doki, or Hiromu Ishimori. Robbie is out and didn't even realize on comms. And again, all this stuff echoed by J. Michael, who is like the biggest New Japan nut, and he wants this promotion to be good more than anyone. He loves Best of the Super Juniors. He is the most, you know, the biggest Ishimori apologist out there. And even he's just hand-waving this and saying this, you know, doesn't really make any sense.
I wonder if the promotion is listening. I wonder if there's a bunch of backslaps and great jobs and fist bumps. They have to know that things are on thin ice, and the general feeling. And again, who gives a fuck what two guys, one guy in England and one guy in the States, think? Right? Okay, fair enough. This is bled over to the Japanese ticket buying crowd. It's, again, I don't want to make 3 or 4 tweets sound like the sky is falling, but it does feel like it's permeated across all levels of New Japan Pro Wrestling fans, and I that's got to be concerning. I hope they're listening, because here's the thing: we're not wrong. Everything that has happened to where we are to this day, like, you can hear it in our voices and the things that we talk about and the things that we've noticed and the things that other people bring to our attention. I hope they're listening.
Yeah, we talk to
a lot,
the most passionate fans of this product, people who've followed it for years and years and years and poured so much of their time and money. And like I said, they want it to be good. They desperately want it to be good. You know, people in different countries, different continents, expressing the same frustrations. You know, this is not a coincidence. There is a problem here.
There is a problem. Yes, sir. All right. Well, there we are. Here we are. Any predictions?
Let's preview the block finals. Here we go.
What do you think? I mean,
all right. So yeah, let's get into this. So we've got this will be on Thursday. We've got the A block finals. So just go straight to the block matches. We've got Blake Christian. He's on 10 points against Fujita.
We'll get a win there.
Who is on 4 points. Fujita?
Yeah.
I think Fujita. Get him on 6 points. 10 points for Blake is plenty. And that'll be a nice upset win for Fujita to cap off his tournament.
Yeah, I'm with you. He'll get the win. I guarantee it.
Then we've got Kanemaru 6 points and Clark Connors 8 points. I feel they're just going to do the cowardly thing and have Kanemaru win so they both end up on 8. But they should have Clark win so he finishes on 10. But they won't.
They won't. But yeah, I agree with you 1,000%. Like, what's the point? All right.
And I suppose Kanemaru could win, and then we get Kanemaru and a partner of his choosing challenge for the junior tag titles. I'm thinking who that would be, though, because could it be Sho? Would he be going after junior tag? I don't know. I'm overthinking this. I'm thinking about this more than whoever's booking it here, so we'll forget that. Despy, who's on 10 points, against Hayata, who's also on 10 points. Great, pretty generous booking for Hayata. I mean, I understand he is holding a singles championship at Noah, and obviously they are putting more respect on the booking of the Noah talent than they are the Dragon Gate talent. So there's that. But I can't. Yeah, Despy's winning this, and he's going through.
Yeah, I mean, give me percentage, 20% chance that Despy loses, 10%. I can't even imagine.
Less, 5.
Yeah, less than that. Yeah. Yeah, I think this is a slam dunk. All right, good. TJP Teton should be really good.
TJP Titan. Yeah, so TJP's on 8 points. Titan is on 10. I would desperately love Titan to win because he's great. But you know what? I'm gonna hand it to Isis here. So TJP's he's earned it. I think he's been really good in this tournament. It's the same trope with the guy who's behind in the points is definitely going to win and definitely going to go through. So had it been the other way around, I might have given T-Town a chance, but they cannot resist the comeback win. So TJP's going to win and go through. And I don't hate it.
Yeah, I don't hate it. Look, again, we hate the gimmick, but it's only brought out periodically. All right. Let's do this. I'll set. I don't know how we would do it. Just how about this? A simple yes or no. Is Ass Wang coming out?
No.
No?
I think I'm going to lean on the side of optimism here and think he's learned his lesson. Whew. And he's not going to do that anymore.
Guarantee it. And I'll say it plays a factor in the finish.
All right, well, I'll take that bet, and we'll see. And all whoever right. is wrong at the start of the next episode, we can laugh at them and call them a massive idiot.
Good.
We've also got Bushi, who's on 6 points, against Kevin Knight, who's on 8 points. Again, Kevin Knight should get the win here, but they won't because they like to even up the points at the end of the block. So Bushi's probably winning this and going to 8 points as well.
Imagine that. That, in a nutshell, just like... puts everything into perspective of what we've like what our issue is. Bushi versus Kevin Knight, and Bushi damn well right is winning it because they like to even up the points. Unbelievable. Okay, fair enough.
Then we've got the B block finals on Friday.
Yeah.
We've got Kushida, who's on 8 points, versus Dragon Dyer on 0 points. Surely they've got to give a win to Dragon Dyer. I think it would be outrageous if Kushida beats him and Dragon Dyer ends up with a goose egg. I think that would be really quite unfair. And I've got no dog in this fight. You know, I don't particularly love Dragon Gate, but Dragon Dyer's been really good. And yeah, I would find it genuinely upsetting if he ends up with 0 points. So I'm going to be optimistic here and call Dragon Dyer getting a win, finally.
I think the odds are good only because it's Kushida. And, okay, even if he took a little time off and did a little thing with Dragon Gate, I don't think anybody would complain. I think it might really be cool. But it's New Japan, right? And there definitely is a pecking order.
This would have been the skateboard versus skateboard match, because if Kushida replaced Yo, this would have been Yo versus Dragon Dyer.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, well, we could have been missing. They could have been like chasing each other around the ring and skate on their skateboards.
Oh boy.
But now instead we've got the skateboard versus the hoverboard.
I'm sick of skateboards already in pro wrestling. I want them eliminated. I'm so tired of seeing them. Yes, go Ollie right up your fucking ass. I'm going to say Kushida wins. Dragon goes over, but I think it's a good opportunity here for him to pick up a win because maybe that might mean Kushida's spending a little bit tour, maybe, you know, just get the juices flowing in Dragon Gate. That might be fun. I doubt we'll see it though.
Robbie Eagles, 10 points.
Doki.
Doki, also 10 points. So you'd think that Doki would win this so that when we go to Hiromu versus Ishimori, there's some jeopardy there. Because if Doki doesn't win, if I'm not mistaken, that means Hiromu Ishimori's already through, isn't he? That would mean Hiromu is also through. But that's exactly the sort of thing I could see 2024 New Japan doing. Where the final match of the block
means
the
tournament nothing.
Means nothing. And I think that's what they're going to do. I think, well, I don't think they're going to put Doki on 12 points. And Robbie Eagles, maybe they just didn't do the maths. Maybe
double count out.
Oh, we'll have Robbie Eagles win this one, and then Hiromu will have to win in order to. But they just fight it up, and they'll be like, oh no, wait, actually, Robbie's already eliminated. So
yeah,
I think they balls this up completely. Yeah, I think Robbie's going to win.
Yeah,
to completely ruin any drama in the main event.
I think it's a guarantee. Guarantee Robbie Eagles win. He's already out. Yep, eliminate all that. Correct. Yeah. Yes. Absolutely. Bank it. And then what? Drilla against Ninja Mac, which is pretty much a meaningless match, right? I would hope Drilla gets a win, right?
Yeah, Ninja Mac on 8 points. That's surprising. That's higher than I thought it would be, but
yeah,
I think you think. Well, unless Ninja Mac wins and then we have some sort of Noah team challenging for the Juga tag belts, but like again, I'm overthinking it.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I'm glad somebody is. Let's put it out. I put a little effort into it. And then what? It's Ishimori and Hiromu, right? For the 417,562nd time. Okay. And we're looking at Hiromu, right? Yeah? No?
Is that it?
We're looking at Hiromu, yeah. Right? Okay. All right.
They'll both be qualified at that point, so they can just shake hands and be like, let's save our energy for the semifinals.
Yeah, I'll meet you at the bar. Yep, that's what you, I mean, if they had any brains, they would do that. And then, so that does that, and then that brings us to the semifinals. When the fuck is that? Not over the weekend. Monday, right?
That is on the, yes. So, we would have Despy on 12 points, and yeah, so Despy A block winner, TJP A block runner up. Then, if Hiromu is winning, he's the B block winner,
yeah,
and Ishimori is the B block runner up. So then we're doing Despy against Ishimori and Hiromu against TJP.
Yeah. Okay, I mean, look, they have potential to be good matches, right? Potential's there. I just don't know the. I don't know. I'm just like, there's no drama. There's no. Like, they're not going to throw us a curveball. They're just fucking not. And again, I'm saying.
They could.
This,
right. The only potential good curveball here is Doki going through. And then we get. No, is that even possible? If Doki wins and he's on 12.
Yeah.
And then if you're on, so what was the result of Doki against Ishimori?
Ishimori won.
Right. So there's no tiebreaker situation where. What am I doing? Ishimori's.
So Eagles lost to Hiromu and Ishimori. I'm reading a fucking Chris Charlton tweet, by the way. Eagles lost to Hiromu and Ishimori. Doki beat Hiromu and lost to Ishimori. And according to his maths, that puts Eagles out. Doki win and Ishimori win advances Doki. But if Eagles wins, the main event is to decide 1 and 2.
Yeah.
So Doki might win. I don't fucking care.
Yeah.
Like, seriously. Oh, fucking Christ.
Right. That was a day one Ishimori beating Doki. Yeah. So there's no way Doki can get
ready. I mean, look, however we get there, I think we're getting Hiromu and Despy.
And Despy.
Which, again, is not a bad match. It's a very potential there for greatness. There is potential for greatness. Something we've seen. And I don't know if anybody's doing cartwheels to see it again. But I think that we need to step back and recognize the fact that the potential for a great final is there. Because it wasn't that long ago that we were all clamoring for Despy and Hiromu at the fucking dome. Because they were coming off some great, great, great matches. Arguably, a match that had a lot of votes for match of the year. Wasn't that long ago, was it? So, again, the fact that it's pretty stale is one thing. But if I'm playing devil's advocate and trying to find the silver lining and giving people smiles, potential is there for a really good match. No, let me take that back. The potential is there for a great fucking match. So if we're going to hang our hat on anything, Joel, is we got the potential of a really great fucking match and a great finals and a great way to end Dominion. I don't think we could ask for anything more at this point, right? I mean, I think we're being greedy. Are we being greedy if we want anything else? Freshness, blah, blah, blah. We're getting a great fucking main event. We're getting a great main event. Come on. Come on. Come around.
Yeah.
Come with me.
Yeah.
Great main event. You don't care.
Yeah. It will be. It will be. It's just the drama is fundamentally compromised by the inevitability of Hiromu versus Despy.
You
think about last year and how unpredictable it was and how it blew our minds that we were getting Watto versus Titan in the final.
Man, I know. That's what I was kind of hoping for. That's what I was hanging my hat on, to be honest with you. Your reaction was like your wife saying, hey, you know what? We're going to scale back on Christmas this year. We're not really going to give gifts. Okay. it's a good idea. You know, it's probably the right thing to do, but what the fuck? You think? I get it. This year for vacation, we're going to stay home. We're not going to go in. You know, it's probably the right thing to do. Jesus Christ. I get it. I feel the same way. Here we are. All right.
Yeah. I mean, he's been good. The performance has been good in this tour. I feel like I'm being unfair. Like, he's not a shit wrestler or anything. And by all accounts, he probably does deserve to be there. I feel we want something new, as you said.
We want something else.
But yeah, I'm just repeating myself at this point. Yeah. I'll go to the questions here. So Mo says, who's been your pleasant surprise in the tournament? Mine has been Dragon Diet. When he was announced, I just assumed he was some schlub Dragon Gate had sent to be the Pin Eater. Instead, he's a fantastic talent and Pin Eater. I really hope he's done enough to get an invite next year. And John's three sets says, you see a surprise elevation in perception, at least, out of this best of the Super Juniors, someone that has significantly raised their profile with their performance, either with New Japan or overall. Closest for me is probably Blake Christian. Honestly, fine, he'll work with a different style. So is there anyone so far where you thought, huh, I wasn't expecting that person to be good, but they were really good? And for me, it's probably Kushida, because I thought he would just be phoning it in as a late replacement, and he wasn't anything special last year. But I think he's had his working boots on, and I have been pleasantly surprised by his output.
I would go with TJP. I would go with Kevin Knight. Once again, just growing in front of our eyes. Kushida was a nice surprise because I thought he did better than he maybe originally was asked to. And when I say better, I don't mean points. I mean in ring. I like the Noah representation, no doubt. I like the Dragon Gate representation. I don't know if either of them blew me away. I thought they were good. But for me, I like the fact that somebody went outside the box with Blake Christian. I like that. Because, did he do anything that was like, am I going to go run out and buy Blake Christian stock? Probably not. But I think people are being unfair. I think he's been fine. I'll stick with Kevin Knight. I'll stick with Kushida, and I think I'm good there. And TJP, yeah.
Multiverse A says, who's been the highlight for you in this tournament, and who do you feel performed the worst? Highlight for me, I think it's the guy who's excited me and thrilled me the most has probably been Kevin Knight. And who do I feel has performed the worst? I don't think anyone has been bad, really.
Sure.
I really don't think everyone has. Yeah.
Sure.
Okay. Yeah, it's show. Because I was just sort of mentally scrolling through the fields and thinking of all the other wrestlers, and then I'd not thought about him. And then as soon as you said him, I was like, oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, that's your winner. I think everybody else has been, you know, at the very least watchable. But yeah, show just. How about Doki? Doki might get some love for me too. I thought he had a pretty decent tournament as well. Show's your winner for least favorite in this tournament. That's for sure. For me, anyway.
Again, this seems like a really weird thing to say, but I think there is definitely a case to be made for Hiromu being, in in-ring at least, one of the MVPs of this tournament. Because all these matches have been really good. It's just the drama of it and the booking that I feel has hindered my enjoyment. Because bell to bell, he's been great, hasn't he?
He's been very good. There's this conversation in my head of this is going to be a great match. That's two fucking guys that you know are going to have a great finals. I'm a little concerned about how they get from point A to point B. If they just let two guys go and do work their magic, like just stay out of their way. That's all I'm asking. Stay the fuck out of their way. Let them have a fucking great match and hopefully end this show on a positive note.
All right. I think I'm done.
Wow.
Knock it on the head.
We're done? I love it. 1 hour, if 22 minutes.
You want to talk about AEW?
No.
You want to talk about Okada in an Anarchy in the Arena match?
I have no idea what you're talking about. I didn't see
it. Oh, it was hilarious.
Really? What was it?
It was very funny. It was the Anarchy in the Arena match, which is, you know, the big walking around the arena and brawling and doing plumber spots.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like everyone coming out in their sort of street clothes for the street fight and
sure. Doing
like thumbtack slash drawing pin spots and tables and barbed wire and hanging each other. There was a flamethrower spot in there. And then Okada just sort of coming out in his normal gear, you know, his like trunks and everything. And just sort of with this look on his face, like he's kind of enjoying it, but also not really sure what's going on. And thinking, not really sure I should be here. But also, sort of, I don't. Have you ever watched Louis Theroux's Weird Weekends?
No, but go ahead.
So he's this like very sort of po-faced British journalist, and he made famous by this TV series he had where he would meet just weirdos and sort of follow them around for a weekend and just stuff like. Nazis or sex tourists or right-wing religious American Christian fundamentalists, and he just sort of follow them around and
get embedded. Okay.
Yeah, but just with a very kind of innocent look on his face, like, oh, so what are you doing here then? In a very sort of disarming way. So just basically the look of a man who is, completely out of place, but in a way that he's sort of getting a kick out of it as well. Like
I hope he's enjoying himself. Got from. Yep. I hope he's enjoying himself.
And he had to sell punches from Darby Allin, which you know probably killed him. Like just having to sell from someone who's like half his size.
he sold those fucking shitbag things from Tongaloa. I think he's not above selling for anything or anyone at this point.
Yeah, all bets are off at that point.
Yeah, fuck it. No, I didn't see any of it.
It was very notable. Again, I don't want to upset the AEW fans, but from my recollection, there was interference in all of the matches. I think there might have been about one or two matches on the whole card where there was a completely clean match. It just felt like every single match, a different person was doing a run-in and interference and a ref bump. Ugh. And I just think about all the hate that, look, rightly, that House of Torture gets. And then I watch that and I think, are you and I so different?
Right. Yeah. I did see one thing where and it's completely taken out of context, but wasn't Tony Khan involved in a fucking angle and he gets thrown down the ramp? I just saw him tumbling yes. down a fucking yeah. ramp.
Yeah, that was shortly before Jack Perry got set on fire.
Oh, he got set on fire, did he? Wow. They're going all in, aren't they?
He's used to the heat, Damon. He's used to the heat. He's been in house at all.
Look, that promotion, crazy shit. They don't know.
I love it. I find it, as a neutral, it's very entertaining.
They just don't know what the fuck they want to be. Like, it sounds like it. They change gears. It feels like all the time. Whatever. Not my concern. Fuck them.
I'm going to Wembley. I'm going to the show.
What?
One of my friends, he bought two tickets and he was like, oh, you like wrestling, don't you? Will you come to this Wembley show with me? And I was like, yeah, I said yes. I'm committed now.
How hot is she?
it's not a lady. It's my university friend who's got very little interest in pro wrestling, so I hope it's not dog shit. Don't do dog shit like they did last year, please.
You'll have a good time. It's going to be crowded. It's going to be, but you know it's going to be crowded. You've navigated those waters before, but it'll be a nice crowd. Big show. You'll have fun.
Pray that there's like a RevPro or a New Japan show the day before. Make the journey worth my while.
Probably will be. Come on. You're going to meet some people, have some drinks, get some sausages. You're going to be having a good time. And then here's what I would do. I'd be like, oh, I think I got diarrhea. I got to go. out skis. Or just ghost them. Just be like, I'm going to go to the restroom, be right back, and then just leave. Just be like, pew, gone. That's the move. Yeah, you don't have to go to the show. Fuck the show. All right. We're done, right? We're done. We're just bullshitting right now, right? Okay, go. Yep. You want to do the red circle bullshit, or are we just done?
Fuck. See you next week.
See you.
My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines. And we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voice of Wrestling Network.